Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Sports Bros Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything BYU sports. Now here are your hosts, Andy Karchner, a.k.a. Big Bro, and Aaron Karchner, a.k.a. Little Bro.
That's right. It is Rivalry Week on the Sports Bros Podcast. Thank you for joining us. It is November 20th, 2018. My name is Andy Karchner, a.k.a. Big Bro, joined with me by Lil Bro, also known as Aaron. How's it going, Aaron?
I'm the Lil Bro down south.
Yeah,
Lil
Bro down
south. Correlation? Do we understand what we're saying there? If you don't understand that as a BYU fan, you're either in denial or you live under a rock.
Dude, you don't say things like that on Rivalry Week, man.
Okay. We are fans, but we're also realistic fans, and that has multi-purpose on what has happened this week on Twitter. But we can be realistic while still cheering for BYU. I mean, come on, people. We don't have to be stupid about it.
Okay, thanks for joining us. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, at SportsBros. Our online home is tornbysports.com. If you didn't catch this whole episode, you can download it on iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere else to get your podcast listening pleasures. So I'm going to push back on you, Aaron. Little brother, I still am in denial about that. Certainly Utah's in a better place right now, but not going to go ahead and call us a little brother.
Okay. We're blue bloods, but how can you defend BYU as big brother? Are you really going to hang it on 1984? Because if that's it, Andy, Utah has beaten BYU 60 out of 98 times.
1984, 1991, 2001. We're talking about all the we're talking about Heisman Trophy winners, national championships, Doak Walker Award winners. You know, we're talking about real accomplishments, right? So
but
Utah
what about,
has
what about,
won a lot of exhibition games. That's true. Utah has won a lot of exhibition games. BYU has won national championships and trophies that are considered extremely elite.
And now Utah has claim to one. Okay, so let's.
Oh,
I'm not
the division
Utah
championship.
Okay, so you're basing the Big Brother based on the past, which, you know, the past means
well,
something. Those trophies and those banners are there. But, like, BYU has lost 7 in a row. And 8 of the last 9, and we could just go on. I mean, how can you seriously sit here and say that we're not little brother to Utah right now?
Until Utah wins at the highest level like BYU has, sorry, they're little bro. We're going to talk about this later.
They busted the BCS twice!
Yeah, in exhibition games. Good for them. That's real cool. we'll talk more, of course, about the rivalry, the Holy War, coming up this Saturday. What everyone wants to talk about, we'll talk about that a little bit more on the show. Aaron, before we get into football, though, shout out to BYU Women's Volleyball, who are playing their last match of the season to go undefeated for the entire season, having up to now only dropped 8 sets all year long.
That's insane.
That's insane. I've never seen it.
You don't have to be a volleyball aficionado to just realize 6 sets in 28 games now. This is their 28th match, sorry. Like, to drop 6 sets all season is ludicrous.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. It's dominance that I've never seen before at BYU with my own eyes. And lest you say that, oh, they're playing in the weak WCC. Now, no doubt, they played number 2 Stanford and beat them, right? I mean, like, there's literally no better team in the country that they could have played, and they beat them, right?
And they
clobbered Utah, who was ranked. Marquette is also ranked. They beat them. They beat lots of P5 teams, Southern Cal, like I said, Utah, Syracuse, Duke. They packed their preseason schedule and beat them, right? And beat them bad. I mean, yeah, they're only 5 game match, I believe, so far this entire season was against number 2 Stanford. Every other match has been either 3-0 or 3-1. Now, that being said, update live right now on your Sports Wars podcast, they dropped their first set to LMU, and I'll get you an update here in a second on what the score is. set two BYU up 19-18. So the LMU weird lion looking things. What's their mascot?
The
royal.
They're the lion.
Yeah, it was a lion something with a crown. Anyhow, LMU coming on strong.
Lions
really
are regal.
The Cougars. Yeah, this. I mean, I don't know. They'd be lying if they said that this game didn't matter. You got to think that kind of nerves are with these ladies right now, trying to kind of make history. But either way, BYU is going to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, and that's just going to be so much fun to watch. I still remember watching the national championship game against Penn State, I believe, a couple years ago. With Jennifer Hampson and everything. I mean, that was epic. So I love volleyball.
Yeah.
Shout out to the women on the hardwood because they are awesome, and this is a huge accomplishment.
And the number one seed in the tournament guarantees them, I believe, home Smith Fieldhouse for, I think, the first 2 to 3 rounds in the NCAA tournament, which everybody knows Smith Fieldhouse is one of the best, if not the best, home court advantage when it comes to volleyball in the entire country. And, yes,
yeah,
we're spending a lot of time on volleyball because BYU is a volleyball school.
They are
a
volleyball
school
right now.
This is a school that is the top 10 programs, both men and women, every single year. I mean, the men went to the national championship 2 years in a row, and the women
and the men
were the national championship the same year two years ago, weren't they?
Yeah, and the women – BYU recently went to the national championship. They were runner-up 2 years in a row. Women have been to Sweet 16 4 or 5 years in a row, including a trip to the national championship game. They're undefeated right now, ranked number one in the country. RPI has them low as like number 7 or something like that just because of their weak WCC schedule. But, I mean, they're so good, and they're stacked. They got a couple seniors, but they got their awesome libero. Mary Lake is coming back. McKenna Miller is only a junior, so they're – that talent is still coming in, and I know we're spending a lot of volleyball during rivalry week. But I'm just super pumped because I wish I was in Provo right now. Because honestly, when I was at BYU, I enjoyed going to the volleyball games, men and women, more than anything else. Even the football games and the basketball games. It was just the electricity in the field house is unparalleled. So
yeah.
Big shout out to them. Aaron, one more thing before we get into BYU football. Okay, this really ticked me off to see. Okay, I'm going to switch to football, just not BYU football. College football playoff rankings come out on Monday or on Sunday, and I'm thinking, okay, UCF
actually just came out today.
Is it today? Okay, yeah, okay. The college football playoff rankings, you know, going into the weekend, UCF was number 11. Ohio State was number 10. I thought for sure after Ohio State took overtime to beat Maryland, not only overtime, but took Maryland going for two in overtime to win.
Double overtime.
Yes, right. It's double different. Meanwhile, UCF clobbers ranked Cincinnati. And so I'm like, okay, finally. They'll at least move up one spot, but no, they didn't. They're still ranked number 11, and
they're number 9
teams
in the college football playoff poll that just came out. UCF is number 9, and Ohio State is number 10. You're looking at the AP poll, I believe.
I looked at it earlier this afternoon.
It's still pretty messed up that UCF here has now won 23 straight games, including New Year's 6 game, and they're beating ranked teams, and Ohio State's giving up 50 points to Maryland. I mean, if UCF this year can run the table again, which everything's pointing to that happening, and at that point we'll have 26 wins in a row and cannot break the college football playoff, it's never going to happen. Never will happen. You cannot, unless UCF goes undefeated again next year, this is the epitome why people want the playoff expanded, because nobody, unless you are a Power 5 team, is going to get in. It's just not going to happen unless you're scheduling like BYU and going undefeated.
Because Georgia gets clobbered by, who was it, by LSU. LSU gets clobbered by Alabama. Both of them are still ranked above UCF, including LSU, who has 2 losses. Now, I get it. Alabama's like unworldly good. But look, if UCF can't crack it, no one will crack it. The reason I brought this up and the link to BYU that I have that's in my mind is this is why BYU is independent, because they see the ceiling, right? They see the writing on the wall with teams like UCF. If going undefeated 2 years in a row can't even get you into the top eight, then that's not what BYU wants to be, right? BYU has had years and years and years of winning G5, you know, WAC and Mountain West Conference championships, and we're sick of it.
Right. Well, and look at Utah State this year. They're having one of their best seasons as a program, and they are just minutes away from being 11-0, including a win on the road against Michigan State to open the season, and they're only ranked number 21.
Yeah.
And it's because of that strength of schedule that is just not there. Yeah, they had that one kind of marquee preseason game before a conference schedule, and then the win against BYU doesn't look great. I know State it does, but you know, when you're just a writer out there looking, you're like, oh, hey, BYU's 6-5, they can't even score 7 points against NIU, not a great win. For Utah State, it is a great win because it's a dominant win. But 10-1, and they're only at number 21. Boise State's 9-2. They're number 23. Mm-hmm. Yet then you have Mississippi State, Northwestern. They're 7-4 and ranked ahead of these guys. I mean, there's just no way for a G5/independent BYU-type school to break into the mold unless it expands. UCF is literally painting that picture for the world to see right now.
And you got to think, I mean, like if Utah State is as low as they are, number 21 in the college football playoff poll, with that one loss, you got to think even if they pull off that win against Michigan State, I'm not thinking they're much higher than maybe 15 or 16. You know what I mean?
16, something like that. Because then you'd have to. Then you'd have to be jumping the likes of, you know, Utah, who's 8-3. They're a good team. You know, Kentucky, 8-3 with some good wins at Florida. Texas, 8-3. You know, I mean, that's your 15 to 18 slot is these teams that have good marquee SEC wins or big-time wins. So, I mean, we're probably going to take a break before we even talk about rivalry week. But this is ridiculous. It's just showing you that there's no reason to go back to a G5 because – you're not going to get in there even if you run the table 2 years in a row.
Right. Even last year after UCF beat Auburn, right, the only team to beat both Alabama and Georgia, and they couldn't climb above number six, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's the ceiling. And that's what I've been saying this like forever since BYU went independent. That's what this is about. It's about increasing the ceiling. And so the model that I like BYU taking is not the UCF Boise State model, but the Utah model, right? What Utah did is they had great success in a G5 conference. They upped their schedule and upped their resources by joining a P5 isn't in BYU's future, but they're increasing their schedule to have a P5 style schedule, and they're getting more money to become closer to P5. And then what Utah did is they have a couple of years of growing pains, and now they're in the Pac-12 championship game. Right? Like that's the model BYU wants to lead. It's not winning 29 games in a row and not even being able to break the top 10. You know what I mean? Well, I guess they're technically in the top 10 now, but
you would now, if you were in a P5, you would. But yeah, at that juncture in 2009, 2010, when that expansion happened, that's what it took. And Utah didn't go to a bowl game for 2 years. The growing pains of struggling in the Pac-12, and this year it finally paid off. And I know here we are praising Utah, but I mean, that's what BYU wants to be, right? BYU wants to beat Utah. BYU wants to be Utah. We have to be realistic fans, people.
Yeah.
It's okay to realize Utah has what we want. They have the rankings. They have the prestige. They have the P5 affiliation. They have
money.
A great coach. Yes, he is a great coach.
Yeah,
and they just have a program that is right now head and shoulders above BYU. Face it. That's the facts.
No
if you can't deal with the facts, then it's going to be a really long day on Saturday.
Yeah, that's indisputable, and that's why I say that is the model that BYU's trying. And you know what? If you look at it this year, BYU on track for 6 or 7 wins, kind of taking the same trajectory that Utah did. You know, they were 5-7 in I think the first year in Pac-12, and then maybe 6-6 their second year, something like that. And then they came out, got into bowl games, and now they're in the Pac-12 championship game. So that's the model BYU is looking for. We got to hope that Kalani Sitake can bring them there. That's, of course, a question we're going to talk about in a minute. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll dive into the New Mexico State game. What did it tell us about it? Does it make us nervous? Did it make us happy? And then, of course, we will talk about the big game coming up on Saturday, BYU versus Utah in the Holy War, when we come back.
Hi, this is Jared Hallgren with St. George Mobile Massage. And this is Rachel Hallgren. Which son says his better half?
After running a mobile massage business for 7 years in Southwest Washington State, my wife and I moved down here to create the premier mobile massage business for Southern Utah.
It's been an exciting experience meeting all our new clients here in Southern Utah. So head on over to St. George Mobile Massage on Facebook and check us out and give us a call today.
Welcome back to the Sports Bros Podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm Andy. That's Aaron. We are, of course, talking about Rivalry Week. Before we go, though, before we jump into BYU versus Utah, Aaron, let's talk about this New Mexico State game. We'll talk about the slow start in a minute, so let's set that aside for a second because I got a lot to say about that. But what did you see in this game? Did anything make you hopeful, or was it just kind of like too depressing to see that first quarter?
That first quarter was really upsetting. It's hard. BYU did what they were supposed to do. They beat a bad team, and they beat them soundly, right? 45-10 is a sound beating. I mean, the game was over basically at halftime.
Yeah.
But to see a slow start against a bad team for the second week in a row, just against bad teams, I mean, they've had bad starts pretty much all year, it's concerning. So it's hard for me to be hyped about this game when Zach Wilson did not have a great game. I mean, he was 12 for 26. Some of those throws were just not good. His footing wasn't there. But before I get into what makes me nervous, it's hard for me to sit here and take away great things from when you beat a really bad team like you were supposed to. You know,
yeah,
it should have been more, and so I was a little disappointed in only 45-10, to be honest.
Yeah, the score isn't what bothered me. What bothered me is what you said is the passing. When you get 510 yards total and only 193 of it is through the air, that's problematic. Now, I get it. The game plan going in against New Mexico State, one of the worst rush defenses in the country, has to be run the ball a lot. I get that, but at the same time, if Zach Wilson and company cannot drudge up 200 yards passing against New Mexico State, then it's concerning. Because, I mean, newsflash, BYU is not going to run for 317 yards against Utah. You know what I mean? Like, if that's news to you, then, like, come out from under the rock, you know? So the couple of games that they've blown someone out, it's been, you know, against Hawaii and against New Mexico State, where they can just rush the ball at will. And barring the miracle of Wisconsin happening again, like, I just don't see this offense being able to move against a really, 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 really good defense like Utah. And that's troubling.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Wilson has the tools, right? He has the arm talent. He's got the escapability and stuff, which sometimes is to his detriment. But this game, I mean, we've talked about it between you and I, and also in the Twitter sphere with fans, is just BYU can't afford to go down 7-0 in the first quarter against Utah, because 7-0 against Utah feels like 21-0 because Utah's defense is that good. You know, I mean, BYU was only able to conjure up 7 points in the first quarter against New Mexico State. That's concerning. Now, what is nice is that Matt Hadley got a lot of rest. They came out with no injuries. You know, Zach Wilson got to sit for the fourth quarter. Tanner Mayer got to come in and get some playing time in case he's needed against Utah. I mean, so there are some positives. I didn't see too many mistakes. I thought the field, the turf monster, was BYU's 12th defender in that game. There was very few penalties. You know, we've talked about BYU's offensive line really hurting BYU in the red zone. I didn't feel like they did that, which is good to execute cleanly against the bad team. That's what you want. So there are positives. I just don't think anything about the performance really made me jump out of my chair and be like, wow, BYU's really got a shot against Utah right now. I just didn't see that. I also didn't think we were going to see that. I don't think there's anything that BYU could have done, save scoring 100 points, to really sit there and tell me, like, wow, this team has turned a corner that's going to beat the streak of 7 losses in a row.
Yeah.
I just don't think that was possible.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
No fault of their own.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will say one thing that is irrespective of opponent. They only had 2 penalties in the whole game. So, you know,
yeah, I think
we have chronicled on this podcast that penalties have killed drives on this team. So I hope the nerves aren't so high on Saturday against Utah that those penalty numbers go back up, because BYU cannot afford to give anything to Utah, and this offense is not good enough to make up an extra 5 or 10 yards or 15 yards, heaven forbid, on penalties. So that's one positive that you can't say, oh, well, they were playing New Mexico State. That's a huge positive. Same thing the week before. They had no offensive penalties, or at least the offensive line didn't have any penalties 2 weeks ago. So those are some positives. But that being said, let's go ahead and jump into this, the slow start thing. Aaron, like, how much does it scare you? I mean, given, like, when you think about the Las Vegas Bowl, like, 5 turnovers in a row, you know, you talk about, like, epically bad starts. Like, how important is shrugging the slow start bug for BYU?
I think it's critical. And one thing that Zach Wilson has been good at is ball security. He has 2 interceptions, one obviously sure. against NIU in kind of a critical moment, and then one, if you'll call it a freshman interception in that first game against Hawaii, where he just tried to throw the same thing twice, right? But overall, he's had pretty good ball security,
yeah.
which has been minus the one game in 2016 when BYU had 5 turnovers and still couldn't win, has really plagued BYU in the series. You bring up the Las Vegas Bowl, which is obviously the most insane start you can ever think. That's not even a slow start. That's like that's literally spotting a team points.
That's
I've
going
never
in reverse,
seen that
yeah.
in my life. That I don't know if you can tell me anytime that's ever happened again. But I think a slow start for me on the offense is okay as long as the defense holds Utah to, you know, 3 points, even 7 points. You know, if BYU can hold Utah to 3 to 10 points in the first half, I feel like that's okay. I don't love it, and I'm not encouraging for that. But I think the slow start, you can't have your first drive be a 3-and-out. You can't have 3 passes that are incomplete, right? You know, you got to try and establish the run, because if you can't run it all against Utah, which is going to be tough, you're just going to have Zach Wilson throwing 50 times, and then you're going to be behind the chains all the time. So I think I would like to see a different game plan. They came out against New Mexico State and just threw, and it wasn't successful, and that's what led to their slow start. So the start is really going to be telling, because we just have not seen this coaching staff prepare this team all season to start games. And I don't know if that's because the game plan is really bad. I don't know if it's an execution. I haven't sat there on the first couple drives and been like, wow, there's a lot of drops or there's a lot of penalties. It's just the play call just doesn't seem to work. You know, against New Mexico State, the worst rush defense that BYU faces all season, and they throw like the first 5 plays of that game. And it's like, if you just need to establish yourself first and then get, I don't even want to call it cute, but the start is so big for BYU, especially just because of how their offense is not going to light anybody up, let alone a great defense like Utah.
Yeah, and I'll say I was at the Boise State game, and the thing that struck me at the very beginning of the game is that Boise State, I mean, that team – now, granted, it was homecoming, so, you know, things were a little bit hyped up on the Smurf Turf, but that team, when they came out onto the field, they were pumped. I mean, they were ready for that game. And it just kind of looked like BYU jogged onto the field and just kind of like, all right, let's do this, I guess. Now, I'm definitely exaggerating here, but the energy level between the two teams was huge. And I've seen that in multiple games, even on the TV, where I see the other team. The one exception where BYU out-hyped the other team was the Wisconsin game, right? You remember the jump around in the third quarter when BYU was excited, right? And that is the thing that I think has been the strangest thing, because everything I heard about Kalani Sitake is that he's good at hyping up guys, and he's good at pumping up guys. So the mental preparation is weird. The play calling, like you said, was weird. I mean, I get it. It's New Mexico State. Do whatever you want in the first couple drives. But, I mean, it's a problem. The slow starts are a problem, and you can't spot Utah even a couple possessions, let alone a couple of points, right?
Yeah, if BYU can hold Utah to field goals, because I think from how this rivalry plays out, I think that feels like a victory for BYU, because, like, take the Las Vegas Bowl, right? pick sixes everywhere. You get a pick six, you get a pick six, you get a fumble for a return. You know, like, touchdowns are demoralizing, and especially early, especially odd turnovers. You know, BYU just, it seems like, I don't remember the last time Utah threw a pick six against BYU. If somebody can tell me that time, let me know.
Yeah.
Because even the game that I was at, Gennaro Guilford couldn't take it back to the house, and it was just to seal it, right? So, like, you have to avoid Utah's defense scoring. Because right now, when you look at this seven-game win streak that Utah's on, a good maybe 3 to 4 of those games decided by defensive scores by Utah. I mean, look at the Vegas Bowl, right? They had two. Did they? I know they had at least two. They might have had three defensive scores in that
first quarter. Yeah.
BYU wins that game. I mean, yes, it plays out, but again, just go with me here. You know, I mean, multiple times Utah scores on defense, and BYU's got to avoid those kinds of devastating blows, especially early, especially with a freshman quarterback going up against his team that he grew up rooting for, which is a whole storyline in and of itself.
Yeah.
So the slow start and the clean start. I'm okay if BYU goes 3 and out in the first 3 possessions if there's no turnovers. If it's punts,
I mean,
and then they're not giving up touchdowns each one of those times. If they go 3 and out for the first 3 possessions and Utah goes and maybe gets 3 points on their 3 possessions, I feel like that's a good start for BYU because it shows that their defense is able to hold a pretty good Utah offense, even with second string running back and quarterback, that the defense came to show up. It's then the offense tends to come back in the second quarter.
Yeah, this defense showed at Boise State that they're capable of keeping this team in the game for some late game heroics that you hope BYU can pull off. I did a little bit of research. Looked at the season this year, trying to think about, okay, how bad has the starts been for Kalani Sitake's team this year? Here's the thing. So they have played 11 games, and out of 11 games, they have been behind at the end of the first quarter in 6 of them, right? So in 6 games, they have been behind in the first quarter. In those 6 games, BYU is 2-4, and those 2 wins came against McNeese State and UMass. So you can't tell me that slow starts don't matter. Now, you might come back at me and say, well, you know, BYU was never going to beat Utah State and UW. Maybe. But, man, you don't go down 14-0 to Utah State and then you start feeling like you have a chance. Who knows, right? I mean, Utah State's super good this year. But
and,
going down 14-0 means something.
And 14-0 because of a pick six, right?
Yep.
Those defensive scores that the rivals get against BYU change the game. Look at about four years ago when Kyle Van Noy on the first play of the game against Utah State gets a pick six, right?
Matters.
That changes the game. You know, it just seems like that happens against BYU more than it happens in their favor. And in the 2 years that BYU gets turnovers left and right against Boise State and Utah, they lose both of those games. So I don't know what it is, but BYU's offense cannot give free points to Utah's stout defense, because all you're going to do is give a great defense more confidence, and they're going to bring more pressure because they're not like BYU. They're not going to lighten it up. They're going to bring more when they start seeing that a quarterback, a freshman quarterback, gets phased, if he does. Zach Wilson hasn't really faced adversity like that yet. You know, I mean, one could say Boise State and NIU a little bit, but he's not faced a defense like this. NIU is a good defense. Utah's a great defense. And this is a rivalry game that is completely different than both of those.
Yeah,
so it's going to be really interesting.
Utah's an elite defense. And you can't tell me that you can't tell me that these slow starts have not had a dramatic effect on Kalani Sitake's year this year. You look at being down 7-0, being down 14-0 to Boise State. Those are two games that were decided by a touchdown or less, right? You can't tell me that starting slow didn't affect those games. You can't tell me that starting out going down 14-0 to Utah State didn't affect the tenor of the rest of the game. The play calling, the playbook that closes down to you when you get that far behind, it changes everything about the game. And like I said, they're 2-4 when they are trailing in the first quarter. So it matters. And like I said, only 2 wins are against McNeese State and UMass. Now, they were tied at the end of the first quarter, barely, with the end of the first quarter touchdown against New Mexico State, and tied at the beginning of the first quarter against Arizona. So we're talking 8 of the 11 games that BYU has played this year. They have been behind or tied, including tied to in my opinion, inferior opponents in obviously New Mexico State, but also Arizona. This is a huge problem. The only games where BYU was in the lead was 3-0 against Northern Illinois, 14-0 against terrible Wisconsin. That's the only two games they've been in the lead. They were also tied 7-7 to Wisconsin. So it matters hugely. And it matters in the bigger picture here, too. Put this into perspective, Aaron. Kalani Sitake is 19-18 as head coach at BYU. And 26 of those games have been decided by a touchdown or less. And he is 10-16 in those close games. It matters. When you have 26 games decided by a touchdown or less, and you're starting out slow in virtually every single one of them, you are shooting yourself in the foot right out the gate. That has got to change. It is a big problem for this team. And it's not Ty Detmer's fault. It's not Tanner Mangum's fault. It's not even Jeff Grimes' fault. Like, honestly, Kalani Sitake has been the common denominator through all this. Now, I'm not trying to say they need to fire Kalani or anything, but he's running out of scapegoats. You know what I mean? Like, it was Ty Detmer, then it was Tanner Mangum, now it's Jeff Grimes, you know, and then it's going to be, oh, well, we have a freshman quarterback. Like, eventually, Kalani's got to take ownership of that record. So, I don't know, Aaron. Like, I'm very concerned about slow starts, and Utah has a way of coming out hot at home against BYU. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's a scary thought to think that if BYU goes down 14-0 against Utah.
And look, part of these slow starts are not just all on the offense. We're not just saying that BYU needs to score 10, 14 points in a quarter. It's the defense, too. I mean, the defense just let UMass walk down the field and score a touchdown, right? Mm-hmm. They let New Mexico State march down the field like 79 yards and get a touchdown, right? I mean, the defense doesn't come out until the second or third or fourth series and then enforce their will. I mean, so it's both sides of the ball. So the slow start on the offensive side is only okay if the defense doesn't start slow as well and give 9-yard cushions on 3rd and 4, you know, like these are the things that are just, we can go X's and O's that we've done all season, but the slow starts are plaguing BYU. And this is the one team, this is the one game, this is the one series you cannot afford to start slow.
Totally, totally agree. Got to take a break. When we come back, we will finally jump into this game, BYU versus Utah, the Holy War 2018. What do we think is going to happen? What are BYU's chances? And can BYU afford another loss? When we come back.
Imagine laying down at home, spa music, hot towels. You just received a 5-star professional hour or hour and a half massage. Now, instead of getting dressed and getting in the car, you put your robe on, lay back down, and take a nap. Profound physical relief and deep relaxation. Call me, Jared Hallgren, at 435-767-1395 or visit stgeorgemobilemassage.com.
Welcome back. We are the Sports Bros. It is rivalry week, and we are about to jump into BYU versus Utah going down this weekend at Rice-Eccles Stadium in Salt Lake City. So we're looking at a Utah team who has 3 losses, 1 to Arizona State, 1 to Washington, and 1 to Washington State. Those are 3 quality teams, especially Washington and Washington State, right? Yeah. Is Utah even beatable? I mean, their starting quarterback and their starting running back fell, and then they just turned around and beat Oregon and then beat and clobbered Colorado. Like, are they even beatable right now?
Everybody's beatable. Okay, and this game, and we chronicle this every single year we do the rivalry, the Holy War is different. It doesn't matter unless BYU or Utah, more recently Utah, has a historically great team. This game is going to be close. It's just going to be. Now, it might be a 10-point game this year. BYU is a 13.5-point underdog right now, which I think is fair. But this game is just, it's close. Utah, I don't know if it's so much Utah playing down or BYU playing up. BYU certainly seems to play to their competition more than Utah, I think. See UMass and New Mexico for the first quarters and McNeese State for that.
Utah does it too. I mean, they almost lost to Northern Illinois.
They do,
you know,
but Utah,
I mean,
tends to play up. This game just, for some reason, Utah seems to have more emotion for this game.
They do, but
I don't know why. Whether it's – go ahead.
But, I mean, they've won seven straight, but of those seven, only one has been a blowout. Every single other one has been a touchdown or less.
And that's what we're saying. So is Utah beatable? Yes, simply because it's the Holy War. Not because BYU has shown me anything that says that they are superior in one facet of the game. Because I honestly couldn't tell you one facet of the game where BYU is superior. I can't go to one position group and tell you that. Now, Zach Wilson, I think, has more potential than was it Shine?
Shelly,
I think that
whatever.
Is there. Yeah, Shelly for Utah right now, their backup. But I just can't tell you that. And because of that, I can't say that I think this BYU's got a shot. But they have a shot simply because of how this game plays out. Utah and BYU, just games are funky. So they're beatable. I think BYU has to play their best game of the season. They have to play all four quarters. They have to have zero mistakes. And we'll get to a Twitter question that I asked about that in a little bit. But what do you think, Annie? Is Utah beatable?
You know what? I think Utah is really, really good. In fact, I think they're better than even their ranking and their trip to the Pac-12 championship shows. The Pac-12 South is a dumpster fire right now. Like, let's just like call a spade, but it is a P5 conference. And Utah is ranked whatever they are, 19 or 15 or whatever they are right now. You know, there's some holes. You know, when you look at last week, Jason Selly only threw 11 for 23, but he did average 9.6 yards. So he has big play potential. You know, they rushed for 169 yards against the Buffaloes. So if BYU can shut down the run and force Jason Selly to be the man, that's the only way that BYU comes away with this, especially if they can get enough pressure or put enough on Jason Shelley that he makes some mistakes. I really, really think with a game like this, like you said, you want to just keep it close as long as you can. But I really think the best thing to do for an inexperienced quarterback is kind of go back to Bronco and play field position and make the other team make mistakes. I'm not going to go ahead and just say bend don't break, because I think your eyeballs are going to explode if you see 8 to 9 yard cushions on the cornerbacks anymore. but I do think there's some value in, if you can play the field position, pin Utah back, make them drive long drives and stop the run, and then inevitably a young quarterback like Jason Shelley is going to make mistakes. And that's what you hope for. Because if you're going to give them short fields, you know, you're going to lose. But that's the only weakness, I think, in Utah. And then I think the defense has to come up with big, either score a touchdown or, you know, get a turnover with really short fields. You know what I mean? A gift, one, at least one huge gift for the offense.
Right.
That's the blueprint to me. The only way BYU wins is those two things: lots of pressure and field position on Jason Shelley, make him make mistakes, and number two, huge gift, at least one huge gift from the defense to the offense. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the only way it does, in my opinion.
Right. This offense just hasn't shown a propensity to consistently drive against anybody, let alone an elite defense. So earlier this week, right when the Holy War week was upon us, I put out a Twitter question asking more or less what needs to happen for BYU to beat Utah this week. Now, you and I and any logical BYU fan knows that just about every single one of these things needs to happen. The option for pressure on the quarterback, offensive line needs to play well, because that's something we've talked about all year, how they have not done that, including the start of the New Mexico State game. The defense needs to score, which we both just talked about, and zero turnovers. The zero turnovers is something that has plagued BYU in every one of the games against Utah in this streak and games before the streak. Right now, the offensive line playing well is 44%. Of about 350 plus votes. I am actually 100% in approval of that being the number one thing, because right now the BYU's offense, I think the defense is good enough. I know they rank really high in a lot of categories, but I mean, they gave up 300 yards to New Mexico State. Okay. Now New Mexico State threw the ball 61 times to get there, and they only ran for 48, but I mean, it's New Mexico State. They should not get over 200 yards. So, but the defense, they have ability. They have players. They just need to come up with some pressure, as you just said, to get on the quarterback. But BYU's offensive line has not shown an ability to consistently get hold against good to decent defensive lines. and get running. BYU likes to hit the A and B gaps quickly, and they like to do that often. But when you're getting 1 yard, 1 yard loss or no gains on first and second down, and then Zach Wilson's behind the chains, third and eight, third and nine, and BYU just can't – they're just not an offense set up for that. So the offense – and the offensive line has also not been great at giving Zach Wilson a lot of time. Zach Wilson needs to get the ball out of his hands quick. That needs to be pounded into his mind this week. Don't take sacks. Utah is not a slow defense. They're going to bring corner blitzes. They're going to bring five or six guys multiple times. If not, I would almost say on a regular basis, I expect Utah to be bringing five-plus guys just to try to get to a freshman quarterback. And they know that turnovers make a huge difference in this game. And turnovers start with the offensive line. If the offensive line isn't getting a push on run plays and running backs are getting hit in the backfield right after the exchange, ball is more likely to come loose. If they're not able to maintain their blocks and seal the edges, quarterbacks are running for their lives and the ball is out there freely and they're making a bad decision on the run or they're getting strip sacks. So everything starts with the offensive line being able to – I'm not saying to dominate Utah because they're not going to. They're just not. I mean, yeah, they dominated Wisconsin, but I think we see Wisconsin not as great as everybody thought. This is a defensive line that for the last decade has been one of the best in the country. You're not going to dominate them, but you just need to maintain them. You need to give some help to your freshman quarterback. So everything starts with the offensive line. Out of those four options, Andy, what do you think needs to happen most for BYU to beat Utah?
You know, this offensive line has been the bellwether for the team. The games that they play really well in, which to me were the Arizona and the Wisconsin game, were their two really their best performances this year. BYU wins. Why? Because they run well, right? Those couple of really big runs against Wisconsin that Squally Canada got were because of huge holes and Squally's skill also, but those huge holes are what make the difference. And I totally agree that giving Zach Wilson time is huge, but I think it's on Jeff Grimes to give. I really think Zach Wilson needs more rollouts. Getting him out in open space where his legs can be a threat to the defense, and B, it's easier to throw it out of bounds because you're outside the tackle box like immediately. More rollouts for Zach Wilson is a good idea. I don't know though. I mean, defensive scores are huge just because it's not just a takeaway of a possession, but it's a score. So it's hard to say that that's not going to be worth as much. But that being said, what was it 2 years ago when BYU had like five or six turnovers and still lost? You know what I mean? Like, it's just a wacky.
But they didn't score. They got turnovers, but they weren't getting the pick sixes. They weren't getting scoop and scores. Yeah. See, that's the difference between a BYU five turnover game and a Utah five turnover game. When BYU turns the ball over five times, a la Las Vegas Bowl, two or three of those are pick sixes. When BYU gets a turnover, it's an interception return for 10 yards, right? And then then the offense, you know, as in that Utah case, implodes and can't score. So that's why a defensive score specifically, not a defensive turnover, but a defensive score to give the offense a little bit of momentum just in the sense of, hey, we don't have to do it all because this is just not an offense that can do that.
I think in any game, defensive scores are the biggest turnaround because it's a potentially 14-point swing. You know what I mean? Keeping a team from 7 and gaining 7 all in one play is just – it's so huge. But that being said, over the long haul, if the offensive line plays well, then BYU has greater than 5% chance. So I guess it's kind of a tie for me between those two. Let's move on, Aaron. Utah – announcing, like, funny, it's telling enough that Utah has to make this announcement, but Utah announces that they're not going to be resting their starters for the BYU game. Is this a duh obviously to you, or is this what some people are saying as an indicator that Utah still cares and hasn't moved on from their ex-girlfriend BYU?
I honestly don't know what to make of this. I actually don't really have an opinion because I think it's just kind of a a ploy or just a different storyline? Because, I mean, how many times can we talk about Vector Harleen? How many times can we talk about the doink off the field goal post? How many times can we talk about Lavelle's dominance? You know, I mean, it's the same narrative every year, and especially the last decade, it's been BYU's lackluster performance and Utah's dominance over Utah. So I think it's just another storyline going into this game, especially given Utah's success in being Pac-12 South champion. Other than that, I really don't have anything to say about it because I don't care.
I don't think it's as big of a deal as people are making out. I don't think it's some sort of indication of how much they care. I think they obviously do care, and I don't think that's really disputable. But you know what? I think any good coach, at this level at least, any good coach is going to say, it's probably better for us that we use this, especially with a quarterback that's on his, what, third start. It's right. Probably better that we use this opportunity to keep our guys tuned up than – you know, just give them a bunch of rest. So I say not a big deal, but it's interesting and fun for sure. So other storyline, you talked about storylines. I mean, I know the wind is so far out there in left field, but if Zach Wilson pulls it off against his childhood rooting interest, you know, on the road, ending the streak, you know, beating the potential Pac-12 champion. I mean, like, how much of a legend will he be?
I don't like to use the word legend, because legend is reserved for the the elite 5 to 7 quarterbacks in BYU history. But it definitely puts him on. It does a number of things, and not just for Zach Wilson. More importantly, for the program. What it does, it gets the monkey off their back. It gets Zach Wilson his best win. It gives BYU a second win on the road against a ranked opponent in a very good Utah team. And again, like you said, a potential Pac-12 champion. This is an interesting stat and what this would do to break this mold, that 5 of the last times BYU has beaten Utah, 5 of the last 7 times, BYU was ranked. Okay, so BYU has only beaten Utah 7 times in the last, I think, 20 years or something like that. 5 of those times they were ranked. 2 of those times as high as number 8.
Yeah.
And whereas Utah has only been ranked 5 of the last 17 times they've beaten BYU. What this tells me, and this is not a tell-all statistic, but what this tells me is that BYU needs to have a very good team to beat Utah.
Yeah.
And Utah just has to – I don't want to say show up, but they just have to. Yeah, they just have to have a Utah team, which is in the last decade a very solid program and team. So, if Zach Wilson was to take this, what I consider a mediocre at best BYU team, a 6-5 team, and beats Utah on the road, I don't care if it's 3-0, 3-2, or 35-32. I think that breaks that mold and it says, hey, this. And but then it just also adds to the stigma of this team. That just, for some reason, doesn't like playing in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, according to Michael Shelton, and just plays better on the road against teams in red. I mean, for some reason, that it would be a really interesting storyline, and it would even add more confusion to this season to see BYU beat Utah in Salt Lake City. It would be really confusing for me to really try and put a stamp on this season for BYU to have 2 wins on the road against top 20 teams, 3 wins on the road against P5 teams, but then you get blown out at home against Utah State and a couple other losses. It just would be really confusing, and to me would add even more of the whatever
mystique
on Kalani Sitake, because it's like,
oh, on Kalani,
what is he doing? Because this is the most consistently inconsistent team I have ever seen. I mean, you could even almost argue that they're the most consistently inconsistent team in the country. You go from beating Arizona to losing to Cal at home, to beating Wisconsin, to having trouble with McNeese State. I mean, that's your first 4 weeks.
Yep.
And then the rest of the season, you score 6 points at home against NIU, and then you beat Hawaii, who was 6-1, I think, coming in. You run away with it. It's just like, it would be super weird if Zach Wilson was to lead BYU to a win. Now, I'm in no way saying I would dislike it. I'm just saying it would just be confusing. There would be no way to rationalize what it does and how it how it equates, because it doesn't compute.
Yeah, and it's real. I think it's really important. A lot of talk has been bantered around about how, well, you know, BYU won whatever it was, 10 out of 12 or something, or 12 out of 15 back in the 80s and 90s. Like, for sure, the game, the pendulum tends to swing. But the difference right now is that BYU and Utah are no longer on equal footing, right? In the past, they've both been a member of the WAC, or they've both been a member of the Mountain West. And so if one team goes on a spurt, the other team has an equal chance of kind of making a run and winning a couple games following a streak, right? When you talk about, you know, BYU in the 1970s and 80s, you know, between 1972 and 1992, only losing twice, right? So 18 out of 20 in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But again, they were both G5 teams. Their resources, their status, their prestige were the same. And so they were on equal footing. It feels different now because as Utah pulls away in this rivalry, BYU is not on equal footing anymore. They're not playing with the same deck anymore. And so if BYU can't kind of get a win or two in here, then that gap is just going to continue to widen, and the chances of BYU going on a similar streak, it becomes less and less. So I just don't buy the thing that, oh, it's a rivalry and like pendulum swings, yada, yada, yada. No, like BYU is being left in the dust of college football right now, while Utah is playing for a Pac-12 championship. You know what I mean? It's a huge discrepancy. So this game is very, very important for local recruits. You talk about guys like Hansen and Coving going to Utah over BYU. Of course, Zach Wilson came to BYU over Utah, but Utah wasn't really all that super interested in him. So it's not like that was a huge get. Anyhow, I think it's important. I think it's important for the program, especially when you talk about all the things Kalani Sitake has done wrong. Playing against rivals is something he has done very wrong. He has one win against Utah State, and Boise State. One in 3 years.
Yep.
It's not good. So this game is huge. And Aaron, tell me if I'm wrong. We got to go, but tell me if I'm wrong. 8-5 with a win over Utah. So if BYU wins out, beats Utah and wins in a playoff, a bowl game.
Whoa, playoff.
Yeah, I know. You know what I mean? 8-5 feels just like worlds better than 7-6 with another loss to Utah. I mean, like, worlds better. Like, hey, this team is on the right track versus, oh, good job winning 7 games, one of them which is FCS, and, you know, a couple others are New Mexico State and UMass. You know what I mean? Like, woo-hoo.
Yeah. It's going to be so interesting when we do a podcast here in a week after this game, and once maybe we know BYU's bowl destination, to see how we react then. Because remember how we were acting last year when BYU was 4-9 and the sky was falling, and it still is not acceptable. But to sit here and be like, okay, now we're complaining that BYU is back in a bowl game and has a shot at 8 wins, at literally doubling their wins from last year. So while on paper, I'm literally looking at it right now, 8-5 looks way better than 7-6, right? Three games over 500 versus one game over 500. But let's see what we feel like in a week or in a month after the BYU bowl game. And when we do our season recap to be like, hey, was this season a success? Are we really going to hinge it on the Utah game? I know we say this every year.
And I'm already saying it.
To me, it's not. I think the streak of 7 in a row is why this season's success is not hinged upon the Utah game. BYU is not expected to win this game anymore, and they haven't been for a decade. So for your season's success to be hinged on a game in which you should not be winning, according to odds makers, according to recent past, according to program prestige, everything we just talked about, this is not a game you should be hinging your season on. This season is a success already because BYU is going back to a bowl game. After last season, nobody thought that BYU should be, and especially after a certain stretch this year where it was still up in the air whether BYU is going to go to a bowl game. So I think what it does is it increases the success. If you have a success meter, obviously it is tenfold better when you beat Utah. But you cannot sit here and tell me that this season is not a success if BYU goes 7-6 with a loss and a win
get what you're saying.
In the bowl game.
it's setting yourself up for major disappointment to say the success of the season hinges on beating a P5 division champ who has beat you seven times in a row and who was ranked and who was a 13.5-point favorite coming in at home. I get that. I totally get that. And if BYU would have beaten a single rival this year, I wouldn't be hinging a success. Heck, if they would have beaten NIU, sure. I don't even think I'd be at this place right now. Right?
Sure.
Because they're playing Utah just to get to the chance to beat one rival, right? And so it comes to this not because it's just Utah, although that has tons of baggage with it. It comes to this because of everything else they've done, losing to NIU, losing to Utah State, losing to Boise State. You know, like all these opportunities lost, you have a chance to make up for it. I just to me, 6-6 is not a success. I don't care if BYU was 0-13 last year. 6-6 is not a successful season for BYU. It is not. It is not. It's just not. And if you are at a place where you're okay with 6-6 in the regular season, then this program is in a bad place. So we got to go. But that's why. I mean, I get what you're saying, but this game matters. So with that, we got to go. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. I'm Andy. That's Aaron. Big Bro, Little Bro. We are the Sports Bros. Online at TornBySports.com. Catch us on Twitter at Sports Bros. Aaron, I'm going to give you the last word here on this rivalry week before the Holy War.
Hey, don't forget to be kind to your fellow Utes, right? I mean, according to the two athletic directors, there's an official letter that we need to be kind. I don't know if we're going to follow that suggestion. What do you think, Andy?
No. I'm never nice to Utes. Go Cougs.